Helen Gim, who joins us right now, was a city council member at large from 2016 until last year. Before that, she was an educator and an education activist, among many other things. Helen Gim, welcome to Studio 2.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here with you all.
Wonderful. And so this was a big week for you. It's only Tuesday, but still, public safety has been the number one issue in the city of Philadelphia. You announced a comprehensive safety plan. We do have a lot to get to, but I want you to take a minute or two and just kind of, you know, lay it all out for us.
Absolutely. I think, you know, for the city of Philadelphia, we need a real transformation in how we're looking at safety. And I know this, that safe cities invest in people. I've made very clear on the day that we announced that we were going to have a public safety mission for the city of Philadelphia that declared gun violence a public health emergency, that, you know, talked about how we are going to deploy people right away because people need to see safety personnel on their streets, but it's different for us. I want to promote more detectives so we can actually solve crimes. I want to deploy mobile mental health crisis response units so people can get situations taken care of that don't require policing. And I want to make sure that there are more group violence and community trusted individuals on the streets to interrupt as violence interrupters, because a lot of the youth who are involved or are in the path of violence don't actually talk to police officers. I think our plan gets more people out on the streets faster in a targeted way and directly addresses the concerns that Philadelphians have, which is we need to make sure that we have our emergency calls responded to. We want crimes to be solved because the most lawless thing about Philadelphia is that too many people get away with things. And we need emergencies that don't require police intervention, that require de-escalation, like mental health, like addiction issues, like homelessness, and you know, and potentially even domestic violence. Just reducing and de-escalating and putting trained individuals out there who can actually do that work.
Yeah, and you definitely have some attention-getting ideas, including guaranteed employment for some at-risk young people. But you've also been quoted as saying, Helen, that you do not have a plan for paying for this. Is that correct?
That's not accurate. Okay. So what we said very clearly was there is a plan to do this. So, for example, about 50% of the young people who apply for summer youth employment never make it through the actual process because they lack documentation, they can't complete the application, or they just never get through it. So my plan is to make sure that we actually get all those young people through it, so we get 100% participation in our youth programming. That's what I mean by guaranteed employment, and what we do with that is we allow for individuals to be on site to help teens and young adults get registered for these summer youth programs. Again, these are programs that are provided for and are adjusted, and now we need to just finish the application process. 50% is unacceptable. We should be at 100%. That's an easy way for me to talk about why I believe we can get to 100% in guaranteed jobs.
That's more of a goal than a pledge to say, if you are under this age, you will be employed and we will be sure of that.
I will make sure that any young person who applies for a job actually makes sure that they finish the application and gets and is able to finish and get to the employment that they choose to do. I'm obviously not going to do child labor practices, right. So I'm not trying to force anyone into a job, but I want to commit that if 50% of young people start applications for summer programs and never make it, that's an unacceptable number. I need them to get the help that they need. And that is on site because we did this at Dobbins High School last year to actually work with young people to figure out who is their point of contact, how will we make sure that they get the emails back, how are they going to get to their next interview, and then how do we make sure that they have the resources they need to get back and forth to the job that they're assigned to. I would like to see more jobs in neighborhoods and communities, and I definitely think we can expand our out-of-school time dollars to provide more summer opportunities in neighborhoods and communities so young people don't have to travel so far and deal with SEPTA costs or other things.
You have an ambitious proposal that you're calling a Green New Deal for Philadelphia schools. It involves spending at least, right, $10 billion over a decade on facilities improvements. That's a big number. Have you calculated how much debt the school district would have to take out in order to cover that cost?
Yeah, I think it's an absolutely acceptable reasonable number, and I'll tell you why. First, I do want to tell you what's not an acceptable cost. What's not an acceptable cost is to have four schools closed down in 2 weeks, including Frankfurt High School and Mitchell Elementary School, which are in some of the most, you know, high crime areas of our city, and have those children be told that they have to go to school virtually for the rest of the year. That is an unacceptable number. It's also unacceptable to have a list of 279 schools that the district has itself identified as having asbestos and potentially being at risk. It is not acceptable for us to not have a plan for the next 10 years. My plan is actually not unreasonable. The School District of Philadelphia already borrows every other year. It is reasonable for us to consider a borrowing plan of $2 billion split between the school district and the city of Philadelphia over a 10-year period that puts us on a path to school modernization, to planning and efforts. The district has already committed around $2.5 billion over the next 4 years, for example, as an example of that. And the city should match it. This is something that we need to plan for. I believe it's something that we can start by talking about. I've talked about a millage shift, for example, to make sure that more dollars of our property tax goes towards school funding without raising the property tax. And I do believe that we can get many of our private actors, nonprofits, philanthropic entities, and businesses on board with leveraging this in, along with state and local funding that should be available.
But I was a little surprised that there wasn't a property tax hike as part of this proposal, because I understand you're saying that there have been quite a number of capital dollars already proposed, but $10 billion's far bigger than anyone else has thrown out there.
I don't think anybody else has actually come up with a real plan to actually modernize schools. I don't think it's about the money. Nobody even has the plan to even be able to do it. But I think what we laid out very clearly is we have to have a plan to modernize schools. We cannot say that over the next 10 years, kids go to school without air conditioning,
sure. In
toxic conditions of lead, asbestos, and mold, when Lower Merion just opened a brand new public middle school that cost $90 million.
No, I don't think anyone's saying that.
Well, I think, you know, the most important thing for us is that we've laid out a plan. The district actually has a plan that's very similar. And my proposal is for the city to match what the district is putting forward. And I do believe that we can start that. We should absolutely get it underway. We should map out what this starts to look like. And I think that the funding is going to start to come through afterwards.
But can you put a number on the debt service that it would require?
I think that the debt service is around, you know, you can say that debt service might be $50 million for every billion that you're trying to raise. And okay. As I said, if you're trying to raise
$500 million,
well, we're not doing it all at once, though. So it's unreasonable to say that we're not going to borrow $10 billion right now for projects that are, you know, a decade down the road. We are getting underway the projects that need to be done over the next 4 years and moving quickly and swiftly, laying out a plan to do it. And I do think that the efficiency by which we get it done, our success and our competence in being able to do it, will bring in more federal and state dollars.
And I want to ask you this last question. You've been an activist taking strong stances on a number of issues. And, you know, if you are elected mayor, you will not have... It will be by a plurality of vote. How will you go from being a fighter to a consensus builder?
Well, about 20 seconds.
You have 20 seconds.
Yeah, if I could just, you know, to be clear, I don't consider myself just being an activist. I'm considering myself who's actually gotten things done. We delivered clean water to every child in every school. We made sure that we modernized school buildings. This is transformational change, and I'm the person who has actually delivered on big change. And now it's time for a big transformation for the city and not the same old politics that hold us back.
The voters can take it from there. Thanks so much for joining us, Helen Gim. Helen Gim is a former Philadelphia City Council member at large.